Good morning, Interweb. Welcome back to the Artifexian podcast. In this month's episode, or is that this week's episode? Fortnite? I don't know, man. Time has lost all meaning to me. Anyways, short little pre-Halloween Halloween show. We briefly do a spot of follow-up featuring Bill's stance on dragons and attitudes towards gay culture in E. Cairn, plus assorted other bits and bobs. Then for the main event, Bill reads us a spooky story. And that is this month's brackets, weeks, slash fortnights, close brackets, episode. Right, Bill, how are we?
Edgar, the me half of we as well.
Oh, good. The we half of we is good too.
Good.
Just before we start, I want to do two little housekeeping points, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
One, I want to replug the Discord. Just I'm going to keep plugging it for the next couple of episodes. So links in the show notes there if you want to go check out the public Discord. Couple of people have moved over and said hi, which is really nice. So the more the merrier. That's the first point. Second point is the honeymoon thing again. So for people who didn't see the last show, I'm going on my honeymoon starting first week of October. That means the next time you're going to hear from us at the earliest will be mid to late November. Could possibly even run into December, depending on how far behind at life I will be post coming back from this. Because I would love to be a person who's able to just work extremely hard prior to going somewhere and have like a back catalog of stuff. But that's not just me. So be prepared for potential, we'll see you in December sort of thing, and consider it a bonus if myself and Bill come back to y'all a little bit sooner. So just heads up on that. Yep, all makes sense.
Sure.
So the next point of we've two points of follow-up I'd like to bring up. One is the fantasy slice of life stuff, and then also we had a couple of what I think are interesting questions about your world, Bill, that I want to put to you. So the fantasy slice of life stuff, this came from the last show from U/reasonableism. They were basically looking for a fantasy, I think specifically a book, like a story, where it isn't all about high stakes plot. It's just kind of like you just get a sense of what it's like to be in the world. Slice of life sort of stuff, except for fantasy novels. You gave a few suggestions last time out, and the listeners have come up with, I think, two kind of suggestions, and I just want to throw them out here for reasonableism. The first one comes from reasonableism themselves. They looked into my suggestion about checking out Ewa's channel, World Building Notes, links in all the usual places. I believe they've hunted down the video where she brings up, where Ewa brings up a book that at least in part does kind of like high fantasy sort of slice of life stuff, and that is Always Coming Home by Ursula Le Guin. If that's how it's pronounced, I've only ever really seen that written down. I'm going to leave a link to that book, and I'll leave a link to the World Building Notes playlist in which this is mentioned. Apparently, it's part of her book notes playlist. So all of that goodness will be in the description. Not really for reasonableism, because they're the one who asked the question, but for anyone else who would like to see this. And I recommend checking out World Building Notes. Very good YouTube channel. So that's that one. And the other one comes from Cosmo Fishhawk 2, who made an appearance in the previous show as well. This isn't a book, but they say to the person who was looking for fantasy slice of life stuff, if video games count, there's several different games where you can run a fantasy potion shop. And I think implicit in that, it's not about like, you know, taking over or saving the world. It's just like, you know, you're in a small little local place, mm-hmm. selling potions. That sounds actually kind of cool. It also sounds like prime territory for like gambling for kids microtransactions, so I hope it actually isn't that. But they left the link, Cosmo Fishhawk 2 left the link, and I will throw that link in the show notes if you want to check that out too. So yeah, fantasy slice of life follow up. Anything to say?
No, I just had a quick look at that Ursula K. Le Guin book, and it looks pretty good. It's an interesting idea. So Wikipedia says that it's a collection of vignettes in a post-apocalyptic setting, written by a kind of a contemporary ethnographer or anthropologist about the people, like, you know, from that time, about the people of that time.
That sounds exactly like what reasonableism was after. Maybe it's less high fantasy, but that sounds definitely slice of life sort of stuff. So yeah, there you go. Final point of follow-up, very short follow-up section today is, we got two comments, Bill, about Ikern. I want to put it to you.
Okay.
Omni314 says, Bill, as all Asterix cultures on Earth have a legend of dragons, do your people have this idea too? Or perhaps do they have real dragons? Basically, what's your position on dragons? And they also say, we mentioned a book where there's an appendices where in it, it's kind of like, the daughter says, when I say carrot, I mean this thing that's not really like an Earth carrot, but like just use that thing. That comes from Anathem by Neil Stevenson, which sounds familiar. So shout out Omni for that.
I was sure I'd said that in the last episode.
Oh, maybe. I don't recall. Mm. My memory's terrible, like a sieve, man. But in any case, apparently we mentioned dragons in the last show. I don't remember that either. But Omni says anyways, what's the Ikerni take on dragons? Are dragons a thing? What's your position on dragons? We must know, Bill.
I haven't decided. I kind of don't like the idea. It's because it seems a little obvious or something. I'd rather have new creatures. And I'm not fully convinced by the all cultures have dragons argument.
I believe Omni went on to say that, like, clarify and be like, a lot of cultures, not like all cultures.
Yeah, but even that, like, do they actually have the same idea, or do they have vaguely similar ideas that have been called by the same name in English? Like, there's nothing. The iconic thing, or one of the main iconic things of dragons in Europe, is they breathe fire. That's not a thing for Chinese dragons. They're very different creatures, and they're very different figures in stories. And then, like, Linorms are different again. And yeah, you could probably say, yeah, everything has a big snake-like creature, and then you could put other things on a snake. Sure. But I'm a little unconvinced by the all, you know, dragons are ubiquitous thing, because I don't really think they're talking about the same thing. It's just the same word is used.
So basically you're saying that simultaneously everything is a dragon and nothing's a dragon. And you would not like there to be dragons on Ikern. You would like there just to be Arvixes, and they're the big scary mythological monster thing.
Well, no, there will be other ones as well. There will be other things other than Arvixes, but... yeah, I don't know. I haven't decided, but I'm leaning towards no on dragons.
Okay. Vulcan Trekkie 45 says, as a queer person, I cackled at the thought of calling an alpha male type a bear, when it has very different connotations in the gay community. And now I'm wondering what the Besky equivalent of bear is in the queer sense. I'm actually going to co-opt that a little bit and kind of generalize what Vulcan Trekkie is saying here to a more general question, and just be like, what's the attitude towards queer people in Ikern? Because we've talked before about how, like, their gender politics are quite, like, you know, progressive and good. Like, they don't really discriminate based on sex. Like, they're really classist people. But yeah, like, you know, male, female, who cares? So part of me can see this going both ways. Like, they could be totally fine with queer people, but also kind of not. What's the take? Do you have anything on this? I know you haven't written about it, but do you have any feelings?
So, like, relationships that would be understood or seen as queer in our world are entirely normalized, to the point that they're not even queer as such. They're not even, like, outside a norm. It's just, it happens. It's a relationship type that exists.
And is there anything on is this a ubiquitous thing? Like, this isn't just a Besky culture. Like, do the Arthani also have similar attitudes, or are they more kind of like trad, I suppose?
No, I think generally.
Discriminatory? Generally, okay.
Generally, most of the cultures of Icairn would not really think about that as a concept all that much. It wouldn't be an important issue.
Okay. It's all about the rivers and the class. It's the only thing that matters. Cool. I figured that was the case. But I just wanted to bring it up. And I suppose as a sort of, I don't know if this is even worth bringing up or something, but you know, I've talked before, and I think you've talked as well about how, or maybe you have, maybe this is a me thing, about how it's often not that interesting to just world build your utopia, mm-hmm. you know, and have like the culture be perfect in every way possible. And it's much more interesting to build something that you maybe don't agree with, or at least in part don't agree with. Mm-hmm. And it's, I find it difficult if I am to think about like trying to construct a culture and be like, okay, let's give them some negative traits, right? Something that doesn't make them all just perfect. I find it really hard to be like, let's make them really sexist because it goes so against, you know, how I feel, or let's make them really homophobic. But and because it goes against how I feel. So I thought about if you had said, oh, they actually are a bit homophobic, I was going to question things like, you know, how does that feel bringing this up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because that can be real tricky. Unless you're doing it to make a point. Like I'm thinking like Margaret Atwood. Like she's obviously, you know, world-built an extremely sexist culture in The Handmaid's Tale. But that is to, you know, hold up the mirror. And shine a light on what society actually is. So in that sense, I guess it is easier to write something that you so vehemently disagree with to try and, you know, I guess call it out, I suppose. I guess I've talked myself into a position. I could see myself making a homophobic culture purely to hold the lens up to our culture and be like, hey, if this feels gross, that's what we do. Like, maybe let's not do that. Sorry, big diatribe. I started off not knowing what I was going to say, and it ended on a point that I'm fairly happy with. Thoughts?
I'm glad we took this journey together.
Well, I think I forced you to come along. I bet you're sitting there being like, where the hell is he going with this? but this makes sense, right? Do you get what I'm kind of coming at? Like, it is good to not always build squeaky clean cultures.
Of course, but yeah.
Not building squeaky clean cultures forces you to create something that you perhaps dislike. And that can be kind of like mentally harrowing.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's follow up. We did say it was going to be a short show this I'm going to say this week, because it actually is kind of this week. It's not this month because we've had two. It's going to be a short show, folks. We mentioned that in the last show. So no grilling us. Okay. No grilling us. World billing.
World billing.
I am excited, Bill. I set you the homework of making a Halloween themed a bit of warbling, and it looks like you have delivered. So I'm enthused to see what's going on.
I'm enthused to read it. Day 1. Arrived in Irusk, following Lenyev's planned route. Journey difficult but uneventful. Balloon in good condition. Locals have no knowledge of Lenyev. Seemingly never arrived. Small village of maybe 40 people, only one in the valley. No mayor or agent, but an elderly man speaks for the settlement. They talk in an odd dialect, hard to understand, and sing strange songs as they work. Welcoming enough folk, but unusually reserved. Day 3. 2 days of fruitless inquiries. Villagers insist no outsiders have passed through since before the dry winter. 8 years ago? None will accompany me elsewhere in the valley to search for Lenyev or balloon crashes. They have a peculiar faith, a cult of forest and sky, the subjects of many of their songs. No knowledge of aviation, barely more enthusiasm for commerce. Elder is unmoved by suggestions of logging or mining, nor the wealth they could bring. Can scarcely tell how they pass their day. How can small farming and living from the forest afford them such long periods of idleness? Day 4. Dined with Elder last night. Surprisingly good. Pork, berries, strong cheese. Local spirit dreadfully rough, I supplied brandy in its place. Told me of his regret in search for Lenyev, advised me to depart ahead of seasonal storms. He had a curious knife, thought it was a pattern fashionable in Mirsir a few years past, but he told me it was a family heirloom. Learned more of their faith, cultic reverence of forest and sky, disdaining the outside world. They took well enough to my smoke and my brandy despite. Took an ascent over the village in the afternoon. No locals would ascend with me, grown more reserved and cooler since my arrival. Day 5. Spoke to the village smith, pretext of repairing some buckles. Her work not equal to the elder's knife. None of the metalwork hereabouts is. Sure, I saw some scrap in the smithy salvaged from a balloon. This far away from trade routes? Lenyev provisioned in Mirsphere before departing on his expedition. Day 6. Barricaded inside my balloon cabin. Balloon sabotaged. A precise and expert job, no crude hacking. Someone who knows aviation. Elder refused to see me when I called him. I forced myself into his chambers, and he struck me a great blow across the chest. I am now sure that was Lenyev's knife. Fled back to the balloon, tried to repair the damage and leave this cursed site. Writing now as I wait to see if repairs succeed. The songs of forest and sky are growing louder without. Final entries in the journal of aviator Thuenyi Tansar. Missing 14 years ago. Discovered in balloon in the Eresk Valley region. No body present. No sign of human habitation nearby.
Oh, yeah, it's so creepy. That's very cool. I really like that. I've said it before, but I love the change in writing style from your usual kind of like archaic flowery language to a very like abrupt, laconic sort of writing style. It's very good. I really like that.
I made a real effort to cut down sentences here, and like this is someone taking quick notes in a journal to expand on it later.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you wouldn't expect them to, like, you know, string together these wonderfully poetic sentences. Totally, and it really, like, you really get that vibe. So that's good. Do you want to give a quick summary?
So, this is an account of this aviator, Thuenyi Tansar, who was looking for her friend Lenyev. Lenyev took an expedition to this remote area, this remote Eresk area, which is inhabited by this isolated people who are kind of a Besky, but they're distant and cut off from the greater Besky kind of culture. And they think, Thuenyi thinks that Lenyev must have come here or he must have crashed on the way. She turns up and they say, oh no, we've never heard of him. And spooky horror things ensue.
Right, cool, very good. I suppose first thing is the sort of geography stuff. Mm-hmm. Where is this Eresk Valley sort of thing? So listeners, Bill is almost certainly going to make reference to the Cairn map here. Those of you who are watching the video, no problem, it's on screen. Audio listeners, pause, go check out the video, you'll be able to see what we're referencing.
So do you see Selen Lake there in the northwest?
I do, the upside down heart-shaped lake.
I suppose it is kind of heart-shaped, yeah. It is to the west of that, so it's like quite out of the way even for the grand stretches of the landscape that are the Abesky standard. It's a bit isolated.
And then the characters, right? Lenyev or Lenyev, forgive my palatalization problems, and Thuenyi. What's like, why is Lenyev going out there?
So Lenyev is like a licensed prospector. He's going out with the intention of seeing, could they start a mine here? Could they start logging here? what can we do to make some money in this area? And he's been missing for a while, maybe a couple of years. And Thweny decides to go look for him.
And is Thweny another kind of like licensed prospector? Is this a colleague who's kind of like,
yeah,
I miss my buddy?
Yeah.
All right, okay, so it's not family or anything.
No.
Grand. I don't know if this is striking, but it was striking to me. They're traveling in balloons.
Yeah.
All right. Like, first sentence, arrived in Rusk, following Lenyev's planned route. Journey difficult but uneventful. Balloon in good condition. Mm-hmm. Now, you've never referred to their airships as balloons before. I'm immediately thinking, are these more kind of like personal? Like the difference between a car and a train, I suppose. Balloon is for personal kind of use.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah, exactly. It's a smaller craft.
And am I right in thinking it's like a hot air balloon sort of thing?
I would say somewhere between a hot air balloon and like a dirigible.
What's a dirigible?
Like a blimp.
Like a blimp. Oh, I thought the Obeski use is blimp like. No?
No.
Man, I have misunderstood so much about so many things. Because I remember back in the day I was like, oh, they're all flying around on sky galleys. And you were like, no, Edgar. I was like, oh, that makes sense. That is a bit kind of like child's fantasy. Made me sad that you said no to that, but you know, made sense. And then I kind of swore and I was like, oh, okay, so these are more kind of like blimps, like the Hindenburg sort of things. And I could have sworn you were like, yeah. So what are the Tamara company using?
Well, they're not balloons necessarily. They probably have like a balloon element to help with buoyancy. Is that the right word when it's in the air?
Sure.
But it's not like a lighter than air situation for the main craft, the big trading crafts and stuff. They are powered by engines and they're heavier, whereas these balloons are lighter than air.
So, but describe to me kind of like, paint more of a picture of the main trading craft. Am I thinking, again, kind of like sort of like a Hindenburg thing with nerfed the balloon part of it? Like that bit's nerfed, and instead of having like little propellers sometimes on like the bit where you kind of sit in, there's just like a mechanical DeWint type thing going on. Is that the sort of vibe?
In terms of shape, there would probably be something like that, yeah.
Right. Okay. That's cool. I like the idea of bopping around the gaff in the hot air balloon. I need to go out for milk, honey. Let me get in my balloon. That's cool. So in the second paragraph here, day three, you say 2 days of fruitless inquiries. Villagers insist no outsiders have passed through since before the dry winter 8 years ago. So question, what is dry winter? But before you answer that, I want to give you props on your delivery of this, because it was really kind of cold and clinical and like kind of monotone, and that really helped sell the horror elements of props. I can't read it as well as you did. What is the dry winter?
That's just a winter where there was a bit of a drought. There was like a bit of a general drought all around Ikern, or well, all around this region. Like notable enough to be given a name like that, you know, when people say, oh, you know, the big storm of 1960 or whatever, you know, that they remember that was a particularly dry winter.
All right. So the outsiders prior to the dry winter would have been bopping around an awful lot and then just weren't, according to these people anyways.
No, like they were always rare. They've always been rare because it's out of the way. No one really goes there. And the last one they remember was before this. It wasn't loads before then.
And these people here have in this small village of 40 people, you say that they have a peculiar fate of, again, forest and sky capitalized. Comment on that for me.
So that they have like some peculiar religious practice, and peculiar in the sense of like it is specific to them, not necessarily that it's weird, but just it is their own and only them, that they practice this religion that isn't common in the rest of, or doesn't exist in the rest of Abesk.
Cool. And the idea of forest and sky seems to imply it's a very kind of like a animacy, sort of animistic is, I think, maybe the word,
yeah,
like
I think so.
Nature-based religion, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. The I have in the next paragraph in day four, I just highlighted strong cheese for no other reason than I really like strong cheese, and I just it's like, thanks. There's nothing better than like when I see cheese being sold and it's like strength like 5, I'm like, give it to me. And then when it's like strength 1 or 2, I'm like, what even is the purpose of this?
Oh yes, I'd like a block of nothing, thank you.
Oh, wait, do you not like cheese?
No, that's what like a strength 1 cheese is, just like a block of nothing.
It's a block of solid milk. That's all it is. It's solidified milk. That's it. It's got no stank in it, and you need the stank in it to make it taste nice. The smellier, the better. Okay, and then day 5, we learn about this elder's knife.
Day 4.
Is that in day 4? Oh, I underlined it in day 5. The elder has a knife, and our protagonist here is kind of like, that knife is a bit familiar. Pretty sure I've seen that knife before. Wait a minute. And then we find out later this is likely the knife, or they are sure it was Lenyef's knife. Mm-hmm. So the elder has, so we're beginning to be like, wait a minute, something foul happened to Lenyef. These people probably did it, and they've taken their crap, basically. I've got the right end of shtick there?
Yes.
And then day 6, we find out that someone knows about aviation amongst this village of 40 small people, which is just really cool. And I like the way you begin layering on like, oh, this knife is a bit suspicious. Wait a minute. These people did kind of have contact with the outside world. Oh, someone here knows about aviation. You're kind of like, oh, this is all building up. And then finally, our protagonist falls, basically. And I love the last line, the songs of forest and sky are growing louder without. Kind of like a, like the mob is coming, mm-hmm. and I can hear the increased shouts and cries. And that's a little bit terrifying, so props on that.
Thank you.
The only other thing I was going to say is whether or not these people are real. I think you intended on this village being an actual village and not like a magical thing, mm-hmm. but the very final thing you say is final entries in the journey of the aviator Thweni Te Ansar, missing 14 years since, discovered balloon in the Erusk Valley region, no body present, no sign of human habitation nearby. Now, that's either that they took a Thweni out back, basically, like literally to the outback and like dispose of her there, or that these people are actually not like, there was not a village. At all, and this is like a magical conjuring, and she was basically done in by the spirits. Likely wrong about that, but here's hoping, ? What is it?
Who knows? So I was really thinking like a kind of a folk horror vibe when I was writing this, and it's thing I've noticed a lot in kind of folk horror, that the endings can be quite ambiguous, or a little bit unresolved.
I mean, you say a little bit, this is like massively unresolved in my book, because it's kind of like, well, wait a minute, hold on, are these real? Are they not? It's a pretty fundamental thing, which is good, which is very good, because we've talked about this before. Your mind, one's mind, will always paint a worse image than what an author will be able to paint, you know?
Yeah.
Leave it unexpressed and you're like, oh dear, these are like, you know, demons from the depths of hell coming to claim people who wander too far away from where they're supposed to be, which is so much better than this is an insular tribe of people who just really want to defend their little village of 40 people.
Yeah. Are they mutated cannibal hillbillies? Maybe. Are they devil worshippers? Maybe. Are they imaginary? Maybe. Is Lenyef in hiding there? Maybe. Who knows?
Maybe. Is Lenyef actually the village elder, and the two of them just didn't recognize, or Thweni didn't recognize Lenyef, and Lenyef didn't want to be recognized because like they went full native when going out there, and like, I'm not going back, I don't want to be rescued.
Like an Apocalypse Now.
Right, yeah, sort of like that, yeah. Mutated cannibal hillbillies is a strong contender for the title of the show, Bill. strong contender. It's good. I love this. This is really good. Cheers, very man. Kind of very chilling, lovely little early Halloween sort of vibe. Mm-hmm. So props to you. Right. Anything to add?
I did try and hint that there was something odd going on with the end of day three, that they're like, they live in this like middle of nowhere. It should be a really, really hard existence, like fighting to scrabble out a living. But they're able to have long periods of idleness and sit around singing songs despite that. That was kind of a little hint towards there being something extra.
To be honest with you, that didn't even register. I just read that as the sort of hunter-gatherer misconception, I suppose. We talked about this before years ago. I think there's a common misconception that if you think of hunter-gatherers, you're like, life was difficult for them. You know, they had to like walk, a bit like our parents, they had to walk for miles and miles and miles to just get like water and berries and all this sort of jazz.
Uphill both ways, and you had to pay for the privilege of going to work. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And because, you know, these don't live in an industrialized time, life is inherently laborious and just awful. Whereas like there's a really good case to be made that like a hunter-gatherer lived a much more kind of chill life than what we do, because they just like, you know, they could like hunt, they could gather fish, we'll say, and hunt and gather around a river bend, say, and then just eat and then spend most of their time just lounging about, you know, enjoying life sort of thing, in a way that we can't really do in the modern world. That's how I read it. Mm-hmm. I read it that this person has come from, Lenyev has come from like air quote civilized society. They come out here, completely misread the situation and think it's just all torture all the time, and cannot fathom that outside of like civilization, life can be pretty sweet. So I didn't even clock it as a sort of like, there's, these may or may not be real, like there's something weird going on here. I just took it as like, I guess, the ignorance of modernity.
I don't know if that really holds the true in the same way for this kind of scenario, because it's not like they're hunter-gatherers, they're people from the 1800s roughly, you know, it's that kind of vibe more than being hunter-gatherers. So I think, because they do have farming and they have like, they've got smithing and such. So I think once you have that level of technology or in that kind of scenario, I think that the hunter-gatherer lot of leisure time wouldn't really apply anymore.
Sure. One thing, this isn't really addressed to you, I suppose, but just to make the point that like, just because like it's roughly the 1800s here doesn't mean that hunter-gatherers can't exist, you know?
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you're saying that here, but just to make that point, yeah. It's always worth, you know, people bearing in mind that like the Stone Age hasn't ended. Like there are still people around the gaff who are probably still in the Stone Age, you know, or in the early Metal Ages, etc. The way we live, or the way I and you in particular live, is not the norm everywhere, you know?
That's the first thing.
You in particular, yeah. Basically the way one lives. So there's that. And then the other thing is, I was just using the hunter-gatherer example of kind of like a more civilized society assumes, more advanced society in massive scare quotes assumes that less advanced society must necessarily be all slog all the time.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the case. So I wasn't making the case that these people are hunter-gatherers. It's just that that's the example that sprung to mind, you know?
Gotcha.
Totally. I can totally see how you can read that and be like, yeah, wait a minute. This place isn't viable for them. Maybe they're actually spirits and not real people. I can totally see, I can see that. And again, props to you, because there's multiple different readings one can have of that, which is nice. Right. Halloween done?
Yes.
That was terrifying. Blood curdling. Anything to add?
Have a lovely time on your honeymoon, Edgar.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. I can't wait. It's going to be great.
Can you remind us where you're going?
Oh yes, I'm going to Peru.
Class.
I'm going to Peru for 4 weeks. I am so stoked and excited. And we're doing like this is the most financially irresponsible thing I've ever done in my life, because I'm just like, I'm glad you approve, because I'm just like, we have gone on holiday since COVID. Like, we went to Santorini there for like 3 days, but we haven't really done something larger scale basically since, the last time that would have been like Kazakhstan in 2018 was the last time we went for something that isn't just a weekend stay away. So it was Kazakhstan 2018 and then Santorini in last year for 3 days.
Where's Santorini?
It's an island off Greece.
Oh, that sounds familiar. Oh yes, you're talking about that. Yes.
Yeah. It's the Mamma Mia was shot there. It's the famous island with the whitewashed buildings and little blue domed roofs. It's a massive tourist trap. To be honest with you, I wouldn't really recommend. there's too many cruise ships. Too many obnoxious tourists. Remember I mentioned that one of the towns there was literally just built for tourism. Like, there are no locals live there. They just up and erected a town as a tourist trap. So I'm glad I did it, but I don't think I would go back. And I think, I'm much more into the just hike into the wilderness sort of holidays. But in any case, most financially responsible thing I've done, because we're going for 4 weeks and we are hitting basically everything. Like, we're going to Lima and then we're taking a flight over the Nazca lines. We're going to this place called Arequipa, which is another like kind of must do. We're staying, I think, overnight on Lake Titicaca, which is this really high altitude lake, and you can stay on the actual lake itself. Amazing. In like a floating little reed island thing. And then we're doing the Machu Picchu sort of crack. So we're just like, do you know what? Honeymoon's an excuse to just go mental. What is there to see in Peru? Let's just do all of it. And to hell with the consequences of that. We'll sort it out later. And so I'm excited and fearful at the same time. So yes, thank you, Bill. I'll endeavor to enjoy myself. I'll send you a text from, I think the highest point we get is about 4,500 meters up. So I'll send you a text from 4,500 meters up and make some sort of pun about being really high.
I look forward to it.
folks, that is us. We will, again, like I said, we will see you mid to late November. Thank you for watching. Thank you for a chat. Hello, chat. Thank you for patronizing the show. Thanks for checking out Discord, all that sort of jazz. Have a great one. Until next time, Edgar out.